For us, it's all about the people. And what we look for in franchising and kind of, if you would, the ultimate franchisee,
right?
It really boils down to just one criteria, which is a passion for health and wellness.
Ross, welcome to the Data Over Ego podcast. This is Ramzi Nassar. I'm your host today with my friend Ross Franklin.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're so excited to have you, man. Ross is a serial entrepreneur known for founding Pure Green, one of the fastest growing wellness franchises, wholesale companies, and e-commerce retailers in the United States. Ross is a prolific entrepreneur. I've gotten to know him over the past 2 years. I've gotten to work and help amplify the Pure Green message and ethos of elevating wellness over the past couple years. And I'm just so ecstatic to have you because I believe it's really important to disseminate and articulate your message to the world.
That's awesome. I love it. Honored to be here.
Yeah, man. So Ross and I met, what, like 2 years ago almost now?
That's right.
A little under 2 years ago. But I've been a Pure Greener, if you will, on the verb, for the last like 6 or 7 years now. I met the Pure Green brand in Chicago when I was living there about 6, 7 years ago. And I just found it at a pivotal point in my life where wellness and, you know, shifting the physical and the mental self was kind of top of mind. So I was overweight and unhealthy, and Pure Green became, you know, part of my routine multiple times a week. And I still remember Phil in Chicago, the franchise owner, who was really awesome. It was the Lincoln Park location. And now I think you guys have 7 there.
That's right.
Illinois.
Yep.
If I'm correct.
In Chicago. Yep.
So yeah, we're excited to have this conversation. Ross again is like someone I look up to, someone that I believe his message needs to get out into the world in a mass way, both for entrepreneurs that are looking to learn how to grow and scale a company, but also just a brilliant mind that can really talk about why superfoods and why people can adopt this kind of mentality and this lifestyle and where Pure Green intersects in that, in their lifestyle. So I hope that we can have that kind of conversation today. And I'm so excited to kind of just get into it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for the kind words. And you know, it's so great. You're such an evangelist for the brand.
Yeah. I mean, Ross and I were just talking. We're like, I think my lifetime value is definitely in the thousands of dollars. And I just love this company so much. And our marketing firm, Doe Media, has gotten the opportunity to work with Ross on a couple different projects now and his team. And we're just enamored by the team and the vision. And we want to be a catalyst to amplify that message. So yeah, let's get into it, man.
Let's do it.
So just like, I know these are, you know, questions you've seen before, but we'll get into the meat of it in a little bit. But, what is just the origin story of Pure Green and you as a serial entrepreneur?
Yeah. So started Pure Green back in 2014 in New York City. And prior to that, my background was in fitness. Used to own my own gym, sold it, started a consulting company, and was known in the fitness industry as the fixer. So I get the call, go in, get the guy profitable who was struggling, launched many new gym chains, yoga studios, Pilates studios, finally juice bars, and came to this realization, which is when you look at optimal health, 80% of getting results is weighted in nutrition. And so great to hear your story and how you discovered Pure Green in Chicago. And, you know, our main mission is just building healthier communities around the globe and just transitioning the mainstream population into a healthier lifestyle. So just so glad that we could be part of your journey toward a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I think it's amazing and the American population needs to know this exists. And I know that you're growing, quite rapidly on really all fronts of the business. But talk to me a little bit about the franchise kind of community that you've built. I found it to be really amazing that every Pure Green that I have visited, both in Florida and in Chicago so far, the franchise owners that I've met and that I've more or less built a relationship with now all kind of disseminate your ethos and the fundamentals of what Pure Green is and making and building and bridging healthier communities. So like, how has that been as part of like the training process, or just walk me through like what it is to be a franchisee of the company?
Absolutely. For us, it's all about the people. And what we look for in franchising, and kind of, if you would, the ultimate franchisee,
right?
It really boils down to just one criteria, which is a passion for health and wellness. And it just so happens that if someone has that passion, our mission of building healthier communities, it's going to resonate with them.
Right.
And so that is why I believe, when you walk into any Pure Green location, you know, it's reflective from the top down. So not only is it our mission, you know, when we hire at the team member level, so the people when you walk into a store who's working behind the line, our crew, you know, what we look for when we hire them is that same passion. You're passionate for health and wellness. And we look for people that can create a warm, friendly, and engaging guest experience. Mm-hmm. And when they have that genuine sense of passion, they're going to educate the guests on the benefits of our products. And so when you walk into a Pure Green, their focus is just getting to know the guests, making friends, and just educating them on the benefits of our products. And I really feel that's how to create the culture, the vibe that we're looking for in all of our stores.
It is a vibe, by the way. If you've never visited one, like, you have to go. It is a vibe. The aesthetic is on point. There's plants in some of them. The decor is light and airy. There's natural light flowing through them. Usually, like, it's, you can go post up and work. You can, which I've done before, you can just go quickly and take it to go, right? And so I have to ask you something.
Sure.
Be honest too.
Tell me.
How many shifts have you put in order to build that kind of from the crew to the franchise owner? Like how have you gotten your hands dirty and rolled up your sleeves? I know you started in building corporate stores in the beginning, and then it kind of transcended into empowering the community and other entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs. So can you like unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. So as far as like working actual shifts, it's been a minute. Definitely in the early days when we were down to unit one and we were starting to expand in New York City, I was definitely a lot more in the weeds than I am now. So, and it's granted, there's times where like if there's a rush, like in a store and I happen to be there, I'm jumping behind the line. Yeah. I love getting into best. It. I feel like a lot of, some of our franchisees and our team members, I think they question if I still got it. So sometimes I like to
see that's why I asked that question.
Yeah. Sometimes I like to show them up a little bit where it's like, if there's a rush, boom, I'm gloving
he's
up.
He's got a flex.
I'm going behind the line. I'm showing them how it's done. So I will do that once in a while for sure.
But in the beginning, like you trained yourself. And that was part of the culture and the training sessions. And if a franchisee signs up and then they fly into your headquarters and they go through your kind of program, you have built that with your team from the ground up and disseminated that and trained on that.
That's right.
From the early days.
Back in the early days, I created the curriculum, what is now today Pure Green University, and how we train our franchisees, how we train our team members. I developed the initial curriculum. But I'll tell you this, which is we have such a great team now. So our second in command, Michael Cicchini, he's our VP. You've met him.
Yeah, I recently got to meet him. He's awesome.
So he's an unbelievable trainer. I would say better than me. And he's made so many developments, him, and we have other team members as well. They've taken what I originally built and just took it to that next level, because one of our core values is continuous improvement. We're always looking for how can we do it better? Sometimes the best ideas, it actually comes from our team members working behind the line. A lot of times it comes from our franchise partners. They've come up with just brilliant ideas. And our franchise partners, they come from such a diverse array of different backgrounds, and they all have different strengths. And so when we get their ideas, sometimes these are ideas are amazing ideas we've never heard about before. And it's such a good fit. And the thing about us is we execute immediately. We're like, mm-hmm. you know what? That's brilliant.
Yeah,
like,
you guys do move with speed.
Yeah, we're like, that's a brilliant idea. Let's put it in effect immediately. So we'll take action on it very quickly.
There is like no bureaucratic layers you have to go through. Like if it's a truly good idea, like you foster that and bring it to fruition.
Now that we have a little scale,
yeah,
it's sometimes it's not quite so easy,
right?
Because even a small thing, when you have like with 50 stores open right now,
can you give us an example of something?
Yeah, so I mean, even something like as little as, there's so many different markets.
Right.
Even when you have to add something in the POS, there's so many different things you have to kind of think through. So sometimes a little thing, you can't just do it immediately like right. we like to.
Yeah, yeah.
But even it could just be a couple of weeks. But we still move very quickly.
Yeah, I love that. I think to any entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur that's listening, like money loves speed. And so does efficiency. And so I think a lot of people overcomplicate it, even in our company and the companies that I've built, like, you know, 80 to 90% sometimes is better than 100% and an extra 3 months later. And then you can just refine thereafter. And I think too many people have a, you know, too much weight on perfection, versus like rapid testing, if you will.
Yep.
Do you guys like, do you feel that? Are we resonating? Are we in alignment there?
Yeah. I call that analysis paralysis. I think yeah. there's too many people out there and they're just constantly thinking through, trying to get everyone's opinion, and they just delay, and they never take action. And so for us, it's, if this is a great idea, we're going to do it immediately. And so I thought of a good example for you. So,
all right, there we go.
All right. So we had this one smoothie on the menu and it actually used cauliflower as an ingredient. Which is kind of a little weird in a smoothie. But this smoothie tastes freaking amazing. Like, it's awesome. You would never know this cauliflower in it.
Cauliflower, right?
We called it cauliflower. That was the original name.
I don't know.
Have you heard this story?
I don't know where I just came up with that, but I think I have. Maybe you like brought it up once in passing.
So here's what happened. So one of our franchisees was like, look, hey, the cauliflower smoothie, it's like, it's not a top performer. It's on the bottom. He's like, but it's such a great smoothie. I think I know why. I'm like, what is it? He's like, it's the name. Just change the name.
Yep.
We changed it to Pure Power. So we took cauliflower out of the name.
Yep.
And immediately, like, it shot up to, you know, one of the top five, like, consistently across all the stores, just from a name change. And an idea came from one of our franchise partners.
That's amazing. Some of our partners at Dough also, like, if something's not moving, let's say it's like an e-commerce website, I've actually also told them, because in the past, like, sometimes it literally is just the name. Like, if they're selling like a shirt and then they change the name and there's 10% increase or 20% increase in demand, like, I think that's a really good lesson. And I think there's a lot of other like little minute lessons like that that compound. And like, no matter if you're in an F&B concept or you're in a fast casual business or an online business or a service business, a lot of times that one lesson can work in several industries. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I can infer this, but because I'm closer to you, I know this, but why juice and smoothies? And what is different about yours? Because I'm addicted to this one. Like, the smoothie version of this and the juice and the juice shot, I drink one of these every single day. And I can tell you that it's literally my favorite juice on the market. And there's other juice brands that exist, but I feel like it's the freshest and it's the cleanest and it makes me feel the best.
Yep. So,
and I'm going to drink it now.
Please enjoy. So short answer is, so why cold pressed juice, superfood smoothies, acai bowls? The short answer is because in the quest for optimal nutrition, I'm looking at what makes the biggest impact on people's health. And what I came up with is superfoods. And so superfoods is like a buzzword now. Right. Everyone uses it. But when you look at what a superfood is, the way I look at it is there are certain ingredients that have a disproportionate amount of nutrients compared to any other food on the planet. And the word superfoods, people call anything a superfood.
Right.
But the way I look at it, there are just certain ingredients that spirulina, raw cacao, the raw form of chocolate, so mm-hmm. high in polyphenols. There's just certain ingredients that have so many vitamins, minerals, and live enzymes. And so what I wanted to do is come up with products that use the highest quality ingredients, the highest quality superfoods, and also make it taste good. So it's kind of that taste plus nutrition. And so we scrutinize like our ingredients. So when you look in our smoothies, like just the whey protein that we use, it's no ordinary whey protein. It's sourced from pasture-raised grass-fed cows. And that is the level, the caliber that's reflective of all of our ingredients. So our product, so cold pressed juice, a lot of people don't know this. So when you go to, let's say, a deli and they have those loud juicers, it's making the juice. People are like, oh, I'm getting it fresh.
Yeah.
The problem is there's blades there that create heat that destroy the nutrition. So if you take juice made on a centrifugal or centrifugal juicer, one of those deli juicers, and you compare it to the same amount, the same volume of juice in cold pressed juice, the cold pressed juice has 5 times the nutrition. It's like drinking 5 of them, which is crazy. And then the issue though is, so when you cold press the juice, we're using hydraulic presses that retain all the vitamins, minerals, live enzymes. But the other problem with cold pressed juice is that oxygen gets in and the nutrition degrades. Mm. So if you have a bottle of cold pressed juice, it's in the fridge for 3 days. The nutrition you're getting on day 3 is a fraction of the nutrition day 1. And so the way we solve for that is we do this process called HPP, high pressure processing.
Right.
And it locks in the nutrition. So it can have the same, it has the same nutrition day 1 if you're drinking it 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later. And the other thing that it does, it slows down oxidation, so it gives it a longer shelf life as well. And that's what allows us to wholesale the juice and make it easy around the world to bring the juice to our franchisees pre-bottled with the highest amount of nutrition.
Which is the model, right?
That's the model.
That is the model.
Yes.
So that is one of their differentiators. And it's a big one because you're also supporting like local farmers and different aspects of like the supply line there, right?
That's
when you
right.
say like pasture raised and like this, for example, like this kale, where does it come from?
Yep. So we have a facility in Connecticut, and so we pay very close attention to the supply chain. We know the farms where all of our ingredients are coming from.
Like personally?
So we have a whole buying team that, yeah. and we use anywhere also with the franchise model, we're using local distributors all throughout the United States. And so local is definitely really important to us. We want to make sure within the stores, we want to make sure all the superfoods that we have, we want to make sure all the superfoods are the highest quality. We know exactly where it's coming from. We do third-party testing. People don't know this, but plant-based protein can, most 9 out of 10 brands contain very high amounts of heavy metals. Mm. And so we want to make sure across the board, it's the highest quality ingredients.
So there is a connotation when like people say it's superfoods or like they're into wellness that it's actually not the purest form or the best form that they can be brought to them, likely because of costs or whatever it is.
That's right.
But you guys don't waver on that.
No, for us, like we never cut any corners. For us, we will never compromise our core values, and delivering the highest quality ingredients, the cleanest ingredients is the most important.
That's awesome. And you could taste it literally in these juices, which I guess you said wholesalers, and we've talked about the franchise, and how many stores there are. Actually, how many stores are there now? There's
so 50 open, over 100 between what's open and in development.
Wow. So this truly is a rocket ship.
We're growing pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so where do you see like this inflection point coming from? Like, was there a point in the Pure Green history that, you know, when you were having your own corporate stores and kind of gauging the viability of this whole model and everything, was there an inflection point where it was like, oh, wow, we can actually scale this nationwide. And this is the route that we're going to take to scale that nationwide.
100%. I would say over the course of our history, since from starting Pure Green, there have been many inflection points along the way that brought us to where we are today. I would say that like it'd be impossible to predict.
Pinpoint.
Yeah. Back in 2014, like I had no idea if we were going to be franchising. I had no idea about a lot of steps on the way. So it really just developed over time.
Interesting. So where do you see it? Where do you see it going? Like, it seems like you're opening stores every single month, multiple stores, and you're expanding territories and regions. So do you have the vision to encapsulate the majority of the United States or all of it?
So we want to be
global.
Global eventually. We want to be very careful because especially in the franchise world, you know, a lot of franchisors have gotten into trouble by opening up locations too close to each other. It causes cannibalization. And the worst thing in the franchise world is when a franchisee feels slighted, downward spiral. That's going to destroy the whole organization. So when you look at the United States, I think for Pure Green, for our model, there's a cap within the US where if we go over this cap, there's just going to be too many units too close to each other. I believe that that cap is 1,000 units. So I believe that the US can support 1,000 Pure Green locations. And if we go beyond that, we risk cannibalization.
And is there like a best practice or, you know, like I tried to start a Pure Green in Missouri. Because I don't think there is any in Missouri yet, maybe in the works, if anyone's in Missouri. It's I literally wanted to do it, but you guys said like the location that I had, the building that I owned was not optimal. So you actually helped them do the location scouting based on dense foot traffic, based on if there's gyms and other wellness or just shops nearby, right? That's part of the kind of fundamental to choose the right location.
That's
prior
right.
to anything.
Yeah. For a successful Pure Green, there's two main criteria. One, to your point, is a great location. And how do we define that? Great location has to be high volume area, either high volume of foot traffic at the center or a lot of cars going by. But a lot of times the car traffic just doesn't translate into guest traffic inside right. the store. So what we look for are anchor tenants. So in suburban areas, we like to open at centers that typically have a high-end supermarket anchor. Think of like a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods, flanked by specialty boutique fitness brands like Orange Theory, Pure Bar.
Right.
When you have clusters of them at the same center, it becomes a
within the
storm.
Same like fractionalized parking spots, essentially.
Exactly.
Right. That in the town center, if you will.
Exactly right. So if you think of like a center where the same parking lot structure, where you have high-end supermarket, multiple different specialty boutique fitness, that's the perfect storm for home run location. Because after they go to the gym, the specialty boutique gym, guess where they're coming for their post-workout hydration? They're coming to Pure Green for their post-workout meal recovery. They're coming to Pure Green. So it creates just a strong influx of traffic. And so the anchor tenants is really important for us as well.
That's awesome. I guess while we're on that topic too, like what is, if you could just briefly go through like what is the kind of high level of owning a Pure Green franchise? Like, cause I know that they're more medium to small in square footage and they also have, you know, a lot of similarities across the design and just like you said, the location and everything. So like, what is it? Because comparatively speaking to even other franchises, from what I did as a potential franchise owner of Pure Green, and like kind of vetting it with you is like, it's actually not as laborious. Maybe laborious is not the word, or expensive to actually start it in comparison to like others. And the per unit like revenue and profit and how fast it can get up to speed and all of that is actually quite incredible. So if you could just kind of touch on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the first thing that we look for and really where our growth is driven, it's by our franchise partners. It's all about the people. So someone who has a real passion for health and wellness, that's how someone would know that it could be a great fit. From there, we're full service. So we do everything for our franchisees, walking them through the whole process. 90% of our franchisees have no background in restaurant operations at all.
Oh, that's an interesting fact.
They come to us and we walk them through the entire process. Everything from site selection, finding the right site, guiding them through the architecture process, finding the right general contractor, and working with them to get their store open as quickly as possible. So we're guiding them through the whole process. To your point, it's a very small footprint. We look for locations as small as 500 square feet all the way to 1,200 square
feet. Which you just opened up one in Chicago. That's really small. I think it's like 500 square feet.
Even smaller. We did what is that one. 250? We did one in Gold Coast.
Yeah, the Gold Coast one. That's right next to my house.
350 square feet.
Wow.
So that's our smallest.
That's location. The smallest one, right?
Yeah, but it works, and that location is so busy.
That's a beautiful location for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, what's the biggest?
We have locations that are under 2,000 square feet, but that's not ideal. It's a bit of a waste of space. Typically, they just have larger back of house rooms, but we like it to be smaller because that really helps to keep the rent very low.
Right. And then as a franchise owner, do you typically see them, you know, get their foot in the door and then after they have proven viability and profitability that they're interested in kind of expanding and getting multiple kind of stores under their belt?
That's right. So we like it when franchisees start with one unit first. We want them to see that the revenue's there, the profits there. We want them to see how easy that process was to get open. And sure enough, like 3-4 months after their first store opens, most are already working on unit two.
Wow. That fast?
Yeah.
Is that
these stores ramp up very quickly.
In the like kind of franchise business world, is that quick?
It's definitely considered very, very quick. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And the startup cost isn't like, you know, again, comparatively speaking, like it's
low. It's low. It ranges from about 350 to 400,000, and that's all in capital. So that's everything from soup to nuts. So that's your construction, your architect fees, furniture, fixtures,
everything.
Security deposit, working capital, everything soup to nuts.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what would you guys say, like, you're like after it's open, and this kind of segues to the next part of the discussion, but like, how have you been able to grow so fast? And like, what support do you provide for these entrepreneurs and intrapreneurs that you nurture and grow?
Yeah. So great question. I would say the reason we're able to grow so fast is because we have a great team. Our team is the rock stars, and it's a lean team as well, but we're constantly hiring.
They're lean.
We're constantly hiring new people. We need to hire a lot more because we are growing very quickly.
And when you say hire more, you're saying like at HQ.
At HQ, at the corporate level.
Yeah.
So we need more people to help open up stores because right now there's months where we're opening up a store every single week.
It's crazy.
So yeah, our team right now that's opening up stores, they're getting burnt out a little bit. So
yeah.
We're in the process right now of hiring some new store openers.
I guess as a serial entrepreneur, which we both are, like this is what I love. I love like sharing experiences because I've had mentors and advisors in the past that have taught me that to learn through shared experience. And that's the best way to mitigate learning curves. So speaking of team, because that's the hardest part of any business, I feel like, you know, as two of the fastest growing companies in America right now, both of us, like team is everything. Without it, we don't have what we have. They're the fabric and the DNA of everything that we do. So how do you recruit the rock stars? And I know it's easier said than done.
Yeah, great. It's a great question. So there's a book. It's called The Who, The A Method for Hiring. And so within this book gives you gems. It's all about just how do you recruit and retain A-plus players. And so the book gives just so many gems for it that's really important. Because so many companies out there, they do the voodoo hiring. right? So, do you know about voodoo hiring? So it's like
tangentially, I kind of understand what you just said.
So, if you're doing an interview, yeah, right? Most people just, they have no idea how to interview people,
right?
And so they'll do the craziest stuff. I mean, I think about my own career. I've been on like the weirdest interviews.
Really?
Back in early days, when I was in the gym business and I was interviewing just different jobs at high end gyms. Yeah, these guys coming from hedge fund worlds, and the way that they do these interviews, it's so weird. Like, they're very hot and cold. They're like, why do you want to work here? You know, it's long hours. They try to scare you a little, see if you can handle pressure. All this weird stuff.
Yeah.
And so the book, The Who, some of the examples that they give and how to hire and how to do the Who method. One is, you want to make sure that it's a great cultural fit. So whatever your culture is, you want to make sure that the team members you're recruiting, they fit in culturally. Because that's really important. They could be a total rock star within their given specialty. Mm-hmm. But if they don't fit in with your culture, it's not going to work. And they also give these examples where you'd be surprised how many people, when they're recruiting, they don't do reference checks.
Yeah.
At all. Zero.
We didn't either in the beginning. And I was like, what are we doing?
I know a lot of CEOs out there, they're just like, I'm going to go with my gut. Like, I'm never wrong. I don't know about that.
It's intuition plus other things, right?
Exactly. You got to do reference checks. And so in the book, outlines.
How many reference checks?
So they say five.
Five?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they say go with the ones they give you and then do your own research too and just randomly call places they've worked and ask for references, because that's really how to solicit like the best feedback. Because someone during
unbiased feedback,
yeah, someone during an interview, everyone wants to put their best foot forward, talk big.
People
game.
Are good in interviews, and they can skate by. They can get past one or two interviews.
Exactly. But when you tell someone, you ask them a question, and just be like, "Look, I want you to tell me like what your weaknesses are, like in this area, right? What are your weaknesses in marketing?" And know that I'm going to be doing reference checks. I'm going to be doing that.
So that's the preface of the question.
Preface that. So when you say, hey, what are your weaknesses? Oh, not just what are your weaknesses. They're going to tell you what you want to hear.
That's awesome.
But no, I'm going to be calling five of these references, the ones you gave me.
To corroborate your answer.
Yeah. And by the way, I happen to know some of the companies you work for. I'm going to be calling the CEO. Like, then they're like, oh, it gets real quick. You're going to get a totally different
answer. Do you see their demeanor change?
A lot of times you can.
Interesting.
So that's really how to get them to really open up, because if they know you're going to be calling their former employer, like, they know it's going to come out one way or the other, so they may as well tell you now.
Ah, that's a really good piece of advice. My team, when you listen to this, we need to do that. Seriously, because people are really good at getting talking and prefacing their boilerplate questions. The five reference, that's a lot of references.
Yeah.
And you do that even for like a middle kind of level employee.
So we wouldn't, this is only for like, for us hiring at HQ.
Yeah. I'm saying HQ though.
If for a mid-level, high-level position, Oh man.
Oh
We're following this method by the book.
Interesting.
And this method, in the book, they give examples. Blackstone used this for one of their portfolio companies and it transformed that company. So like, this method is proven.
Real quick, just because like, this is the hardest thing to scaling a company past hundreds of employees. Like we're at like 65, 70 now. You know, when we met, we were at like 15 or 20.
Wow.
So just in like 2 years, we've tripled.
Congratulations. That's rapid growth.
Thanks. It's a lot, but it's also a lot to maintain, to also maintain the quality of who you're bringing in and making sure that they can be, you know, trained or wired the way that you want, because no matter who they come from, like, let's say you had someone come from a competitor that had, you know, the experience and all that stuff, but they don't think like you and they don't understand your values.
That's right.
There's still a ambiguity and a gray area there that you have to bridge. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Even if their resume is like on paper perfect.
Yeah.
Right?
It's part of that cultural fit. They could be a rock star, have a great track record, but if they don't fit your culture, like for us, if they're not passionate about health and wellness, they could be amazing in their respective field, but they're not going to vibe with our team.
Right. And the vibe's real.
Yeah, it really is.
The vibe is real, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when we met, we vibed.
Yes, we did.
Right?
Yep.
Like pretty instantaneously.
100%.
I'm pretty sure I got Ross's attention through a cold email or a cold LinkedIn.
You had, I remember
multiple attempts as
you,
well.
You had the best approach. You're like, hey, I go to your Sunset Harbor location. I get your blue banana smoothie. Like just from that, like you had my attention. You had me hooked.
Well, it's true too. I mean, and that's actually how I've grown our company is authentic outreach. Like people think that they can just like walk in and prove credibility or trust to people. It doesn't matter. Like if you can't emotionally like relate and you can't like be real, then the conversation, you probably wouldn't even take the conversation. I wouldn't take the conversation. So yeah, I mean, that's a lesson like on how I've gotten a lot of our relationships and just as a human being, how I build a relationship is just authentic outreach. Like I genuinely love Pure Green. Again, we're going to look into the point of sale and the e-commerce and look at my lifetime value because I'm actually curious.
Okay.
On my multiple rewards at multiple locations that I still need to redeem at the Sunset Harbor location. My favorite one to start was the Pink Dragon. And for some reason, like most people, all the people that work at Pure Green are like, that's not the best performing smoothie.
It's not the most popular one.
It's so good. Do you like it?
It's not one of my personal favorites.
All right, that's fair. But what are your top?
I mean, for me, like the banana nut, the blue banana, the almond butter and hemp acai bowl.
That one's amazing.
I mean, those are those are up there for me.
Do you eat and drink it after working out? And like it's in your rapport and your routine as well.
100%.
Could you say that about everyone on the team? Or most people on the team?
Most people on the team, all our franchise partners. I mean, everyone lives and breathes Pure Green, so for sure.
And if there's any way, I know the man sitting right in front of me, but if there's any way that I can get a lifetime supply of Pure Green, I will sign up for that giveaway offer or whatever it is.
I can make a call for you.
I don't know, man. That's an expensive call. That's okay. We can barter. All right. So kind of going back to fast growth and kind of the aspirations and where you're at, the actual trajectory of growth, like how important is like branding first before we go into marketing? Because to preface that question, like if you have gone to a Pure Green, their name is on everything. It's on the sleeves. You're very intentional about where you put this. Has that been helpful in growing both the consumer and the franchise interest? Like, can you walk me through what branding means omni-channel to you?
Absolutely. So for us, branding is so important. And I've always thought we've had incredible branding. But a couple of years ago, we needed a new kind of refresh, and I wanted like some new lens, someone who looked at it from a different light to kind of take a look at everything. So we brought on this guy who was a former lead designer for Tesla. He was the guy who
that makes so much sense.
He told the CMO of Tesla where to put the logos on the cars, and he also was a former lead designer for Google. And so he came on, and one thing that he said to me right off the bat after going through everything is he's like, Ross, if you want Pure Green to be a $1 billion brand, it needs to look like a $1 billion brand first.
Mm-hmm.
And so he made some tweaks to the logo, just really small things that no one else would notice.
This updated up here.
So if you look at that logo, the Pure used to be a little thinner and he thickened it up. The lime green on the heart, he made it just like a little brighter. And he created some new typography for us. And these little changes added just a higher degree of polish to the brand, getting it one step closer, looking like a $1 billion brand. Huh. And so, I mean, that even those small changes, those nuanced changes, like
the layman wouldn't have picked up.
No one else would pick up on it, but it just gives it that added polish. So we're, again, committed to continuous improvement. We're always looking to improve, but everything really starts with the branding. So the branding has to be tight in any company.
But then when you put it on the windows and you put it on the sleeves and it's all over your website and every which way, shape or form, like you're being very intentional, and not everyone that I've seen and or have worked with does it to the degree and the intensity that you do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, even right now, I'm still not happy with some of our imagery. So we're actually doing a big, campaign right now where we're going to get more evergreen assets. So we're reshooting every single product, every single smoothie, every single acai bowl, every juice, every shot. We're reshooting everything because when you make a change like this, and I just want it to look so high definition, look so good, the shadows in the right places. Once you do that, like,
and are you involved in all that?
Oh, 100%.
Like
100%
to the nuance of the photo shoot and everything.
I'm looking over everything, every little detail to make sure it comes out exactly as we're planning. But once we launch that and we integrate it into all the marketing, even marketing that we're doing with you, it's going to have a massive impact.
Right.
Any marketing dollar that we spend, we're going to get a higher return on ad spend.
Yep.
Because of the quality of the content.
100%. 100%. I agree. Having been in, have my hands in the creative assets and everything. I agree. They're good, but they can be great.
Exactly.
And I think that's the same kind of theme going on the refinement of the logo is just constant iteration and improvement, right?
Exactly.
That's yep. Awesome. So branding's really important. We've kind of unpacked that a little bit. How does branding and its relation to marketing both like, in store and, you know, what you do, elsewhere and what we help you do. Like, how important is that to the present and the future growth of Pure Green and the awareness of the name and the product line? Like, cause, you know, I believe it's very important, but it's always better to hear it from you.
Yeah. I mean, it's our core identity, you know, and so we're very careful with, even just across social media, the social media content that comes out, how that portrays the brand, in-store marketing, external marketing. There's a direct correlation between just the branding, the marketing, and then you have different sensitivities by channel, by platform.
Right.
And there's so many different areas that, and you have to, it's crazy. And some of these platforms, like what works on Instagram doesn't work on TikTok.
Correct.
And you have to kind of like, if you're going to go on TikTok, like you have to do things totally differently. And yeah. For some brands, it's like, there's almost like a misalignment where TikTok, I don't know what you're thinking on this, but for TikTok, like it's not right for every brand. It's hard. Hard to really go viral on TikTok if you have certain brand guidelines like you have to stick to.
Yeah. I was actually just talking to your team about this. I actually think like, and this is why I wanted to have this pod and this really this discussion, because Ross and I like to link up usually every quarter-ish, is just the continuity of what you do. It really does resonate like throughout everything that Pure Green does. Like I see Pure Green in the airports. I see Pure Green with, you know, wholesale distribution like everywhere now, like pretty much like in my local like grocery store and my local Mercado, like it's becoming more synonymous and I feel like it's becoming more ubiquitous. And I believe that marketing and the different channels like Meta, Google, YouTube, TikTok, they all have their place in the funnel. But you have to treat it differently. And so I think you guys have done a pretty damn good job of that. And I think we've come in and helped amplify that 100%. Further. With, you know, the right account structures and just strategy and thought behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talking to your team recently and we were talking about like the lifestyle aspect of Pure Green and like how lifestyle, in addition to like production, photography and videography, like works. But how like the lifestyle aspect of integrating it into your lifestyle and then all is so important. And then second to that, like how the founder story and the team resonates with the population, because even in like some of our ad assets, it would be amazing to like, cause there is somewhat of, you know, a proprietary process that you guys like go through to do the cold press juice and to source it. And like, you're very granular in your quality control and everything. And that would be really cool as just like a suggestion that I was telling the team about to further amplify the message is to like show it being bottled at the factory, like
100%,
like yep. then splicing like you into it, and then like maybe Sam or whoever, like and just bringing that like founder story like to the masses from the authentic voice versus just cute and beautiful creative. It's 100%. Like a hybrid of it.
You know, we talk about lifestyle, and I think about our brand and what we need to do a better job of. To me, what really comes to mind is how do we tell our story and communicate that and convey that through marketing in a much better way? Because I feel we need to improve in telling our story, how we tell our narrative. I mean, we have such an amazing, inclusive brand, warm, friendly, engaging. How do we get that across in our marketing? How do we get that? How do we communicate that that's our brand identity? That's who we are. And to your point, I love the idea. We definitely need to convey that through this is where we source our produce. Here's content of the farms. Here's how the cold pressed juice gets made. Really kind of tying it back to nature and tying it back to the process. I feel that's a real strong part of our narrative that we need to do a much better job communicating.
Yeah. I think you guys have all the like foundation in place, and now it's just like, how can we extrapolate on what's there and introduce like new ideas, really? Because I think people don't put a premium on ideas. I think people think marketing is like clicking buttons and things like that, but really it's the strategy before the actual dissemination or the media that's deployed or whatever. Do you feel that too?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. What comes to mind is I went to this restaurant leadership conference.
Okay.
And this was in Arizona. And you know, all the vendors there, they always try to like wine and dine you for dinner.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to go to it. One of them was at a steakhouse. I'm like, let me go to that one.
Steak.
So it happened to be me and 10 CMOs of big brands. And these brands had hundreds of units, thousands of units. I was like, oh man, this is a perfect opportunity to kind of just like get some, you know, insider information over here. So I was like, all right, guys, let's talk about ROAS. And I want to know, like, what platform is the absolute best? What form of marketing, both traditional and digital? How are we going to get the strongest return on ad spend? All of them had the same answer. They all said it's all about micro influencers, not the influencers that have millions and millions of followers. Yep. They're like, go after the micro influencers that are perfect for your brand, where there's a cultural fit. It resonates with their audience. And like, if we have a store in Orlando, we want Orlando micro influencers, and they promote it authentically, as you said, to their following. They're like, that's going to be the best form of ad spend. Like, they're like, go all in on that. They're like, that, don't underestimate that. Like, so important.
That's awesome. That's a great piece of advice.
I think when you do that, and then you amplify it with the traditional advertising as well.
Yep.
Like that's the ultimate powerhouse.
That's what we're doing. That's what I was suggesting too, is from like the lifestyle and the brand creator voice and the authenticity. Yes. 'Cause like nowadays, like people can spot an ad. Like they know what's deliberate, but if you can kind of, as a marketer and like a CEO, I probably shouldn't say this, but like if you can kind of trick them in the feed, for example, on social or YouTube, for example, and you can kind of just like trick them in essence, and they don't know it's an ad, but it's an authentic piece of content with good engagement.
Yep.
Like that's what wins. Like I was just at Meta HQ a couple weeks ago for a private marketing summit, and it was all about the creator. Like the creator, and then AI, right? Like that's what it was. But it's the intersection of those two things, which is where the power comes from, which is taking those micro influencers and amplifying their voice through media and organic.
You know who comes to mind? This is a brand who is doing exactly what you said, who's crushing it right now, is Liquid Death.
Yeah.
Have you seen some of their, like, their these new ads that they're doing?
I see it. We see the email automations.
Do you see the one they did giveaway with, you know that show, The Boys?
Yes.
They had the Deep on. Did you see that? Yeah. He's talking to, little kids in school. It was just so funny.
They're but culturally so relevant.
Yeah. Like that's, I read the copy, their copy so tight, their so perfect for their brand.
Yeah.
I'm like in awe of like their, that creative genius.
Yeah.
And then I saw another one, recently with, they did with that Ozzy Osbourne on there, came out with this like new death dust or something like that. Yeah. Mixing water.
The packets.
Yeah. And they had like Ozzy Osbourne on there. Yeah. And I'm like, these guys get it. Like they're like creative marketing geniuses.
They're at the forefront of it. They're actually creating the trend.
Yeah.
Actually.
And so whenever I watch stuff like that, like I'm thinking, okay, I got to call you because I'm like, okay, how do we do that for Pure Green?
Yeah.
Like that they're doing it for
give
their
away your jet.
I don't know.
You never know, right?
But they're just on another level.
They are on another level. They are definitely on another level. It costs to be on that level too.
It does.
It's not free to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
They have a very large staff, right? They have the best of the best minds. And so I think there's other brands that also do like an interesting job. Like recently, like one of our friends, they own OKRP, which is a creative firm that is the agency of record of Burger King. They were brought in to kind of revitalize Burger King's image as it was going downwards, to my knowledge. And they came in and like you said, like revamped the identity of Burger King and like changed the tagline. And recently they came out with an anti-ad commercial and ad, that was like a rotten and moldy burger that got people's attention. And then they like transitioned it into here's why we're not this.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of creative, ways to get your point across. But nowadays it's authenticity and ingenuity will break through that noise. So how did you break through the noise? Because there are a lot of independent juice, wellness, both independents and there's a handful of franchise.
Yep.
And did COVID have an impact on that? Was that an inflection point? Because I've seen several acai places and, you know, pop up since then.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll start to answer the question just with the cold pressed juice. So with cold pressed juice, you know, a lot of big competitors and they're all owned by huge companies. So you got Suja owned by Coca-Cola. And going back like 7-8 years now, you had this other company called Blueprint owned by at the time Hanes and Celestial.
Mm.
What these guys were doing, they all started out with the same size juice as us, 16 ounces. And what they did was they were competing on the shelves of supermarkets and they went down in size from 16 to 12 to 8. Price point was dropping too. But the way they were dropping the price point was they started out cold pressed juicing, but then they changed their practices. And so they're using frozen produce and frozen juice. And so they're using inferior ingredients and that's how they dropped the price. And so quality went down. Consumers noticed that the taste didn't quite taste the same, didn't taste good. And this is what all the big guys really started to do. And for us, we just stuck to our guns. We're never going to compromise our ingredients. We're never going to compromise our quality. And we just stayed in a 16-ounce bottle. Stayed the same practices how we make the cold pressed juice, and we were the last super premium cold pressed juice left standing. And so
to this day,
so just by sticking to our core values, we're one of the fastest cold pressed juice companies in the United States right now. And it's just, and a large part of it is because we will refuse to cut corners.
Right.
And it's the same thing when you get into some of our key categories in the stores, like acai, for example.
Right.
People don't know that most of the acai places out there, if you go in there next time, watch them make an acai bowl. What you'll see is you'll
scoop it.
Yeah. Scoop it out of a bucket. And they're like, how are they making so fast? What the hell?
Yeah.
So
and it's all sugar.
That's the problem.
It's actually gross. I just got one. I'm not going to say from where, but I literally just did a yoga class.
Yep.
A hot yoga class because I'm obsessed. I'm addicted. You should come with me sometime. And I went and I was like, I need nourishment before we hit the ocean. And I drank this thing and it was like disgusting.
Yep.
Or sorry. I made an acai smoothie out of it.
Okay.
But it was still like pure sugar.
Pure sugar, ice crystals. And so if you dig around on their website, a lot of these guys bury the nutrition. Like you go on their website, you can't find it. If you dig around, you'll find like a sheet where they try to like isolate all the ingredients to make it really difficult. But when you finally look and you see how many grams of sugar, a lot of them have over 100 grams of sugar in a single acai bowl. Like that's over 3 Coca-Colas. It's pure deception. It's crazy.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah. And so we're one of the only
3? Oh, wow. So that's contrary. That's very contradictory. So we shouldn't eat that from these places.
So what you want to look for when you go to a juice bar, you want them to make the acai bowl there. Do
so
not.
So what do you guys do?
So we actually blend it.
Yeah.
We take the acai puree yep. packs. We're blending
and
it.
And the pitaya.
And pitaya.
And the pitaya.
It's all handcrafted and made to order. And so that way, you're not getting, like when you put in a sorbet, it's full of stabilizers, emulsifiers, gums, guars, all kinds of additives in addition to that high level of sugar. You're putting all that, all those pollutants into your body, which is crazy. So I would never eat that acai from a sorbet. You need it. You want it.
9 out of 10 that I'm thinking about have the scooper.
I don't know who else aside from us does it the way we do it. Man, we're just refusing to cut corners.
We need more pure greens around. Seriously.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that fact.
Yeah.
Is there any other like little tidbits like that?
Yeah. The other
like
way
on
you'll
the smoothie,
see.
Like the smoothies. Like I know some people move to like the clean, organic or clean, like, fruits and vegetables. But like what other like little tidbits are there?
Yeah. With smoothies, people are shocked when they find out that we don't use any ice in our smoothies.
You don't.
Zero ice.
You're right.
Because there's no filler. Ice is a filler. Why would you put that into the smoothie? If you're like that's
the last 3 smoothies I didn't get from Pure Green because there wasn't near me, all had ice.
Yeah, and that's the bulk of what's going in there, which is crazy. We do zero ice.
Do they
zero
do that
fillers.
For margin savings to mitigate the amount of money that goes into 100%. The product?
It's all for cost saving measures. And so we want, one, our superfood smoothies to have unparalleled taste that like is like nothing you've ever had. And you can't do that with ice. Ice dilutes it down.
Right.
Then you pair that with super high quality ingredients, which no one's using the quality of ingredients that we're using. And that's how you get that amazing taste and high performance nutrition. And we have product detail pages on our website.
You do.
For every single item on the menu.
I just emulated it.
Everything.
On your website. So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. We're actually revamping a part of that to make it a bit more clear on the website where you don't have to, cause it is front and center right on the product page. There's no burying it or hiding it here. Like it is right there. It's just like you said, like we can go through the next iteration and make it even better.
Exactly.
That's really interesting statistic. I didn't know all that. I also recently saw, like the old CEO of Chipotle say that when the hedge funds or whoever the money people came in to, take it over, they started mitigating the portion size. And he's like, that's not actually how you save costs because that just pisses people off essentially. And their returning customer rate has dropped. And now you see all these like organic, like influencers that are being, I think, more paid. I don't know, but they're definitely being incentivized, maybe with free product or something, to go in and make these like viral videos that have like tens of millions of views. I don't know if you've seen them, of like going into Chipotle with the camera on the guy or girl. And then it's just like, doing double meat for free and stuff like that to try to combat it. So it's interesting because I think and you guys are independently owned.
Yes.
Right? You're a privately owned
That's
company.
Right. Yep.
So when you have that control, like you don't have like someone on the left ear and the right ear telling you what to do or not to do. So you guys are going to stick to that ethos.
100%.
That's awesome.
We'll never
That's admirable.
Thank you.
Seriously. Because I think people love it and they're, you know, I see the repeat kind of customer rates that this brand has. And, you know, once you like try Pure Green, you don't usually go back to anything else, based on like your loyalty system and like all of that. Like people genuinely embed it as part of their lifestyle, just as if they were to go eat like at Sweet Green or like another, you know, food place. Like it is part of their repertoire, right?
That's right. Our guests are coming in multiple times per week. Most come in 3-4 times a week. We have guests that come in twice a day, which is crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we have very high repeat guests in our stores.
That's awesome. I think that makes for the profitability as a franchise owner, right?
100%.
That's really it. Cause I think we've talked about it before, but like lifetime value and really knowing like when your first purchase and the time decay to the second, to the third, to the fourth, to the fifth, to the hundredth is like literally the business model for selling something, right? No matter what it is, insert widget.
Yeah.
Right? Like lifetime value and retention and making sure they're happy and treating them as humans that are, you know, evangelists for the brand. I feel like you guys have created that like loyal army almost.
That's right. That's the second part of it. So when you combine world-class products with world-class hospitality, that's where the magic happens. And no one's trying to sell you anything. They're just educating you on the benefits of the products, helping you to live a healthier lifestyle. When you have that, and it, the worst experience is when someone walks into a store and the person behind that counter is just like on the phone, they're not paying attention at all. Yeah. Like that's the worst. It's so disrespectful to the yeah. guest. But when they're there, they're engaging you. Hey, how you doing? They know your name.
They do.
Know your order.
They know your order. I used to call when you guys had the call. In Chicago, mm-hmm. and they would recognize my voice, say, "Hey, Ramsey, your pink dragon will be ready in 5 to 10 minutes.
That's awesome.
Like, I think actually that's why, outside of the product being superior and amazing, like the level of quality and like them actually caring from like the lower employee to like the franchise owner was really it was different than anywhere else that I've been.
That's so great to hear. That's the goal for every one of our franchise partners, to deliver that type of hospitality and that level of guest experience in every store.
That's awesome. I think that's, if you can keep that getting to 1,000 locations, I mean, I don't see anyone coming near this company. Like from, what'd you say? That was a really good tagline and a punchline. World-class hospitality meets world-class products.
That's right.
Meets world-class branding and marketing.
Maybe you can use it in some of our marketing.
That'd yeah. be great. I mean, hopefully yeah. we can take a clip or two out of this and run it as an ad.
Let's do it.
For sure. All right. Cool, man. Well, I think this is awesome. I think just to segue to where we're at, like, let's talk a little bit about the vision. In the future. And then also like, if there's entrepreneurs and CEOs and founders and directors that are watching this, like, let's give them some shared experiences and advice, like maybe that you wish you would have gotten.
Absolutely. So let's start with that.
Let's start there.
So I feel most entrepreneurs, I see a lot of them struggle. And what I see a lot of them struggle with is this, we alluded to it before, analysis paralysis. Mm-hmm. So they're just thinking everything through, they're weighing things, and just, you know, in starting Pure Green and every business that I've done, I've always taken action. And I, you know, have this thing where it's ready, fire, aim. And too many people are focused on overthinking everything. And that's what gets in their way. So I think most entrepreneurs will highly benefit from just taking action first, not being afraid to fail, not being afraid to test and recalibrate later.
I wholeheartedly agree. I tell that to our teams at almost every week at this point, because you kind of have to re-ingrain it and embody it, because sometimes people are perfectionists, but actually that 80-90% rule is really the rule. Right?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think riffing off that point, though, that analysis paralysis can be good and bad. Where it's good should be shined. Where it's bad, like you said, needs to be, like, axed. Riffing off that, though, like, I think that there's a common denominator on leadership styles that relate to the employees and what they maybe think through much to, because they're fearful of if they don't come to you with the right answer. And so I, at least in my company, like, I try to tell them the 80-90% rule or analysis paralysis can kill a company, really. That's the fact. But at the same time, I do want them to be detail oriented. I do want them to give a shit about the details and really focus on that. Do you find that there's like the flip side of that?
Oh, 100%. And I would say within an organization, you want the founder CEO to really be the one moving fast, but you want to have his core team be able to compensate for that. And you definitely need the analytical guys on the team. 100%. Everyone can't be just shooting all the time. You got to have guys on your team that can play defense. So in any organization, it's that balance.
I was just telling my team really this important. Yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I feel like I'm living, like my feet are on the ground, but my head's like 3 to 5 years out already, like thinking of what's next and how we're going to grow. And it's like, can they kind of corral and just like make sure that your vision is being executed upon without moving to the next part of your ideas?
That's right.
Are you an optimist or a pessimist? Are you pragmatic? I'm a radical optimist.
I am as well. I feel like a founder, CEO, like most tend to be optimists because you have to be, because any entrepreneur like goes through real tough times. It's always ups and downs. And to kind of get through some of the downs, you have to be optimistic. If you're pessimistic, like you're not going to continue.
I think that also helps, just speaking from personal experience, like the pure green mentality. And like your values can help if you're an entrepreneur or you're working with entrepreneurs or, you know, you're building your consultancy or whatever you're doing. It's like, I found success by being healthy. And that's why I love this company so much, because if you're not healthy, then if the times are low, then the anxiety can get to you and it could suppress you. And that's so right. If you like eat superfoods and drink them and like go to the gym or whatever form of body movement is good for you, like that for me has helped me get through the ebbs and flows of entrepreneurship. And bringing it back to the beginning of our discussion, that this and a pure green and a couple of lifestyle changes and HIIT workouts and yoga, like the combination of those things have helped me build a 2-time, you know, Inc. 5000 fastest growing company in America now, and wave and ride the wave and get knocked on my ass 100 times, but get up 200 times to win. And I think without being conscious of your health and focusing on that as an entrepreneur in particular, like it's harder to weather those storms.
100%. You have to, energy is the most important thing. If you're not feeling good and you're not taking care of your body, you're not focused on your nutrition, it's real tough to grow and scale a company. I think that's why a lot of, especially in the tech sector, yeah, all these guys are into biohacking.
Yeah.
It's the reason so many CEOs now, they're experimenting with cold plunging. Yeah. They're getting into all
infrared
of the
sauna, genetic testing,
all that stuff. Yeah.
The 10X kind of lifestyle.
That's right.
Are you into that?
For sure. I've been into it for a while now. I have to be careful though, because the term biohacking, we have a nutritional advisory board for top tier dietitians. 3 are dietitians for pro sports teams, 1 for the U.S. military. They don't like the word biohacking. So I have to be careful.
Because there's like negative connotations to it?
Yeah, because they want everything backed by science, backed by peer-reviewed scientific research. They don't like that term.
Experimental stuff?
Yeah. But I feel that for CEOs of companies, them kind of getting into the modalities to promote their health, to give them more energy, it gives them an edge for sure.
It does.
Yes.
And especially like, just briefly, like we all see the macroeconomic times we're in right now, the media headlines, the wars, all this stuff. And that definitely shifts folk. We're in an election year, right? The debate was yesterday. We could stay apolitical and in the middle here, but
yep,
like that, how have you weathered the storms? We've talked about inflection points. I have my own war stories, being at the bottom, growing, getting shot back down and rebuilding several times to get to this point. But like now where consumers are tighter on their spending And it's a real thing. It's not like a fugazi. It's not a facade. Like it's real. Like there's credit card debt, like housing market, like there's several factors and signals outside of what we can control. How have you interpreted that? And has that been a part of your discussion this year or the next year? Do you see that?
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure. It's undeniable. What I will tell you though is that I feel that our specific sector is a lot more insulated to it than other sectors.
Right.
And we noticed this during COVID. When COVID hit, you know, one of the things that we found with COVID was that there's never been a time where people have placed more of a premium on their health mm-hmm. and their family's health.
Yeah.
And so that helped the attention to superfoods, the attention to optimal nutrition. People were coming into our stores and like our immunity shots, like sold out, like people were.
They weren't in stock all the time.
Right. And so we just found COVID actually made people more focused on their health. And we're seeing that right now just with the compounded annual growth rate for health and wellness. You know, it's a massive market. You know, it's a $7 trillion market. It's growing rapidly every year. And when you look at the superfood sector, it's growing even stronger. And so as economic times get, it's tough right now for sure. But people are prioritizing their health. You know, we're talking about just entrepreneurs and CEOs, them putting health first. I think most people benefit by putting their health first. And so that's why I do feel that our specific sector is more insulated compared to, let's say, the fast food industry.
Right. Yeah, I can confirm that. I was just at a private equity meeting with about $1 billion in food. Like food manufacturers. I think I introduced you to Gordon.
Yeah.
Once. I was in Puerto Rico with their portfolio and they had some bankers there and some money market people. And they, also confirmed that with like the macroeconomic situation that's happening, that food fundamentally is insulated because people need to eat and drink, you know, food and beverage. But the better for you category is still seeing a rapid, expansion both in retail and Amazon and online.
That's right.
So go to puregreen.com, go to your Pure Green locations, support the entrepreneurs. Like that's why we're doing this. Is I think Ross and I want to make an impact. I think we both share similar values as human beings that we want to change people's lives for the betterment of their own lives. And that's why we did this. So do you have any, other, points or anything you want to ask me or any questions?
No, this was great. Yeah. A lot of fun. We got to do this again.
One more. Yeah, do you have advisors or mentors?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Don't have to name drop, but talk to me about that. 'Cause that's been a pivotal thing in my life.
Yeah. Over the course of my career, you know, I've had some great mentors that were perfect for me at the time.
Mm.
But I do feel that you can outgrow a mentor. And so I feel that a lot of the mentors I've had in the early stages of my career, they were perfect for me at the time. They gave me the development that I needed at that time and then outgrew them. And then getting into just kind of the next level of what we're working on right now, we have a whole new set of mentors and advisors.
I agree with that statement. I'm in that journey right now. How did you go level up to where you were? Like, how do you find them? Network, friends, outreach?
So I think the first thing is like getting into franchising, for example. I knew I needed a mentor in the franchise space. And so I think step one is getting very specific and identifying exactly what you're looking for. So for us in our case, I'm like, you know what? I need like a C-suite level from one of the biggest franchisors. We need someone like that on our team who can help advise us. Because chances are, whatever we're going through, they've been through it. Exactly.
So shared experiences.
Exactly. So it's really helpful to hear his war stories and whenever there's something we're dealing with, going to him for advice and how he would handle it. It's so helpful.
Is he a formal mentor?
No, so he's a current one. He's a current advisor.
He's a current advisor. So yeah. He's in the company.
So he's in, the, yeah, he's an advisor, a board member. Okay. And we have a separate advisory board where just for strategic advice.
Which is like the dietitians or the nutritionists or
exactly
the doctors.
Exactly.
Which is also, is that just random segue, but is that how you, because like Pure Greens in the athletic organizations of, you know, different people, is that, was that also how you guys got into it? Because they back it and they back the nutritional studies and all of that.
That's how we met them with the nutritional advisory board members. So we work with over 80 professional sports teams, 30 college teams. And just from being in that world, we meet some really impressive people. And so the right ones we brought on to our nutritional advisory board.
That's incredible. Yeah. I think mentors and advisors are pivotal. I'm currently looking and trying to expand my even network right now. So, we'll see.
You got to bring, Gary Vee on.
We'll see.
On to your advisory board.
We'll see. We'll see.
Let's go.
All right. You know what, man? I met Gary Vee at the F1.
Oh, cool.
Went back, last year, not this year, last year in Miami. But there's a lot of people I look up to. There's several CEOs. I actually want to introduce you to one. His name is Salim Basool. He's a former CEO of Middleby Marshall, one in every three restaurants, fast casual up to Smith and Walensky's or wherever else has one of their restaurant products. They also do like kitchen equipment and all of that. One of his sons is my best friend. They live in Dubai now. He's currently CEO of Six Flags North America, but he is someone I learned from back in the day and kind of just continuing to level up is like literally what we have to do.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
In order to set that tone, set that pace and that precedence. So
yeah, I feel like just surrounding yourself with the right people and having the right people in your network just makes such an impact. Being around the right type of
proximity
people
is person, power.
That's right.
Literally.
It really is.
That people say it as cliche, but that it resonates so deeply. Proximity is power. Whether it's your team that you surround yourself with that are a team of rock stars or not, or a mentorship and advisory team, it's all proximity, right?
I feel like I learned so much from just being around the right people and just kind of watching them, like really successful people, and kind of, you know, when they invite you to their house,
go
to a business meeting, yeah,
go
and just like pick their brain and like see what you, it's really sometimes where I learn the most is just observing them.
Yeah.
And just watching them, how they interact with their teams, how they interact with their family. Just kind of, it's some of these things that you notice, like that's where the real learning happens.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you bring the right energy to any scenario or environment you're in, whether you're at a conference or you're at a lunch with people, if you can bring that positive energy, people want to be around that. That's why I feel like you and I hit it off too. It's like we have a magnetic energy about us. I'm speaking humbly by saying this, but like it's clear and people want to be around that. And you can't make that up. It's either genuine or it's not. Right?
Exactly.
So keeping radical optimists and keep incorporating Pure Green into your life because it is the best. And Ross, that was awesome. I had so much fun, man.
Awesome. No, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, man.
I love it.
Take care.